Welcome to Breaking Down the Buzz, the podcast where we explore the thrilling world of tech industry leaders. From AI to the latest trends, we cut through the noise and decode the tech buzz and share our collective insights and insider knowledge. Welcome back to Breaking Down the Buzz, where we dive deep into the stories behind the trends and innovations shaping our tech world. As we celebrate Women's International History Month, it's my absolute pleasure to introduce a guest who embodies the spirit of entrepreneurship and innovation in the tech industry. She's not just a trailblazer, but also a dear friend and a pivotal member of my Tech Lady tribe. For those of you who might not be familiar, Max Potential is an extraordinary company that's making waves by identifying and nurturing top-notch tech talent. Under this amazing woman's leadership, they're breaking barriers and reshaping the tech landscape, one success story at a time. Please join me in welcoming the phenomenal Kim Mahon, CEO of Max Potential, to the show.
So Kim, thanks for joining us. Super excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me. It has been a while, way too long.
Yes, way too long. Exactly. So for people who don't know you, I obviously know you well, but people who don't know you, I'd love for you to give us kind of your story and your background and how Max Potential came to be.
The story, I mean, what a journey. It's a long and winding road. I'm founder and CEO of Max Potential, and Max is focused on helping people break into tech careers. We are hiring people that are caught in that can't get a job without experience, can't get experience without a job. And our belief is that you learn best by doing. So we get them working on projects as quickly as possible. We're kind of like a mini consulting firm that feeds talent up into other layers of the ecosystem, so senior consulting firms or enterprise clients. How I got my start and why I'm doing Max, I've been blessed with a lot of varied experiences. So I grew up outside of Oxon Hill, Maryland, challenging background, but I look back on that with gratitude. Gave me some, tenacity that I still lean into today. Fell off the tracks somewhere in high school. I became a single mom at a young age, three kids, trying to figure out how to put food on the table. I started starting businesses. I was running a daycare business. I then started a web design business, web development business in 1996, which is when the web was first emerging, and moved my family to Charlottesville so they could be in safer circumstances, and was running this web design business. Wanted the stability, security to take care of my kids. Got my first job at GE, GE Fanuc in Charlottesville. And what was interesting about that is they never would have interviewed me if I hadn't gone back. I went through community college. I was going to school online. I got my bachelor's. They never would have interviewed me if I didn't have the bachelor's degree, but it was the portfolio of websites I had built that got me the job. And so I learned that very young, that it was a lot more about what I could do than just what was on the resume or the letters.
You needed to tick the box to get the interview, but the reality was the experience that you had
is what got me
was not gained in school.
Correct. It was just by learning, by doing, by going out and building things, building bigger things, building better things. So I built a lot of small business websites back then. GE just changed my trajectory forever. Like once I got in, I started taking advantage of all the training opportunities. I started climbing up the ladder. I worked for GE Corporate. I was on GE Corporate Marketing Communications team. I got into IT. I launched their first online travel application and oversaw a data center lift. I moved to Richmond to join GE Financial at the time, which became Genworth. And then at Genworth, same thing as an IT leader, I checked all the boxes. I managed all the different aspects of IT. So from the data center lift to get us separated from GE to application development teams, mostly with the web. And then, 40 sometimes, some people go lose it and go buy sports cars. I decided to jump, and you made the same leap. You made the same leap.
Same time,
so,
too.
Around the same time. It was I think it was Marty Beller that I saw. So Marty Beller came to one of our women's group meeting.
Yeah.
She was 2 years ahead of me, cohort wise, and she had taken the leap and was running a startup here. And I was like, she could do it. I could do it too. And there was just something there. I knew I had more to give, my kids were older. So my youngest was then in high school. My oldest two were off in college. And so I had a little bit more risk tolerance. And
right.
I jumped ship, wanted to go start something. I had another startup that failed before Max. And that was interesting. I spent a year, I call that my PhD in entrepreneurship, because okay. I went out to build a product. And it was when I made the leap, I had discovered what problem I wanted to be working on. I had gone to South by Southwest, EDU, and there was something about that experience, the learning by doing. Like at that point in my life, I put more value. Now I had all the degrees. I had a master's degree. I have a black belt certification. I have a CISSP. Like I was credential, anything right. to beef up my resume. But at that point in my life, I just put more value on that upbringing and what I had learned from all those other experiences. And so I wanted to see people get credit, more credit. I wanted more credit for my life experience, and I wanted to see others get credit for their life experience. And, you know, I would sit and watch my daughter on YouTube drawing for hours and hours. Right. And I'm like, why isn't she getting art credit? Like, she's building a skill right now.
Right.
More skill than if I went and sent her off to an art class. Like, she's actually doing this for hours and hours. So we started to solve the, I was like, education is broken. We're going to fix it. Went to go start it by, let's build an app that would let people get credit for their life experiences.
Yeah.
Spent a year and a lot of money. Like I think of that as I was unlearning all of that corporate training. I started right. off by calling the lawyer and setting up IP agreements for IP we hadn't created yet. Like right. we were talking about our values. We had the intranet like planned. Like I had this whole vision of what this company was going to be. Needed to learn. The first thing you need is product market fit. So after right. a year, a lot of money, having built a poor man's version of Evernote with John, my partner, needed to figure out what to do next. And it was either go back to find a job
right.
Or do something else. Max Potential, it's interesting, is Max with two X's, because, interesting enough, given the time, the Droid Razer Max was the flagship phone that year. And I had spent that whole year while John was building our iOS app, reteaching myself Java and building our Android app. And I was actually going to go freelance as an Android developer and started looking up domains, Max Tech, Max Dev, Max... And for some reason, I searched Max Potential and the .com was available. And I was like, I looked at my daughter. I was like, what do you think about that? And she's like, I like it. And I said, that's a different business. And I feel like with Max, it was just that intersection, Max Potential. The reason I couldn't go forward with the product in Telegraph, what we were building, is that I had doubts deep inside, but they were valid. That like, why me? Why, even if that's a great idea, why am I the best person
right.
to bring that idea to life? Why are John and I the best? Why wouldn't Google or Microsoft or any of the big tech companies do that? Why would Evernote do that versus us? Are we really, do we really have what
and
it takes?
They have so many more resources.
To get it there, they have yeah. so many more resources. Yeah. But when it came to Max, so there I put all the pieces together. Could I answer the question, am I the best person to bring this idea to life? And I had a much more confident answer at the time. I do believe that right. because if we're going to be helping people from alternate paths break into the industry, well, I certainly traverse that path and, you know, might have a map to share. And when you combine that with John, my business partner, John, who he joined a year later. We took a little break after the product thing. he right. was running his own mobile development business. When we rejoin forces, I mean, he's engineering proper out of Vanderbilt. Right. Like he came through the other path. And for us, you know, diversity is very important, and that we have a lot to share with each other. There's a lot that I've always been able to learn from him and right. his background, and vice versa. So, I don't know. So Max is here today. we're 11 years in. Yeah. We started like right about the same time. We've been tracking. It's been great following your success as well.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because the way that Synergy, not the way that Synergy Technical, the company came to be, but the way that Synergy ended up with its name is somewhat similar in that I knew that I wanted to go start the consulting firm that I had always wanted to work with as a CIO. You know, as a CIO, you work with, and you know this, you work with different partners, and there are partners that are great and there are partners that are not so great. I wouldn't call them partners. I'd call them vendors.
Yep.
And I knew that I wanted to create this firm that was the place that I wanted to work as an IT professional, but also the place that I wanted to work, the company that I wanted to work with.
Yes.
And so I knew that I was going to be quitting my job, and I knew that I was going to be starting this company, but I didn't know what I was going to name it. And I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which seems odd, but I get up at four, used to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning. I don't anymore. And I got on the State Corporation Commission site to come up with a name. And I was running through all the buzzwords at the time of what was big. And yeah, this was in 2011. And synergy is like the biggest buzzword. And so I was putting in all these combinations, and Synergy Technical was available. And I thought, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to register Synergy Technical because everyone's going to think they've heard of us.
Yeah.
And that's literally what I did. And that's how
it is very, very similar. And I think I've always respected that about you and about Synergy. And I mean, you know, we love working with you all as well. And just having watched you explode, like I knew what the minute you jumped on cloud, I think I was in the emerging tech role at Genworth when you started. And so I was at the one at Genworth trying to help them, like, we need to be focused on cloud. We should be trying to pave the way for them to move things to the cloud. And I knew you were ahead of the curve on that. I'm like, oh, that's smart. Like that was...
in this that was market, smart. That was tricky.
That sure. was timing wise, you were right there, like ahead of the... It was on my radar as the emerging tech person there. So I'm like, oh yeah, there's a long runway on that one because it's where it's headed.
It's been a ride for sure.
The building the company you wanted as a vendor, I did the same thing. It was like dealing with all of our vendors and, you know, respect. I just felt like it was so becoming so commoditized.
Exactly.
I would ask everybody, like, well, why are your people better than his people? You know, like, it was his at the time. Right. It should be his or her, but...
It was his at the time, for sure.
It was his at the time. And it would be like, you know, because if you don't have a good answer to that question, they're both giving me the same deck. They could do anything that I asked them to do, you know, and it felt commoditized, like I was ordering from McDonald's. Well, give me two Javas and a little SQL on the side. Like,
right.
And I wanted to hear somebody tell me, how do you find them differently? How do you treat them differently? Like, why are your people better?
Right.
And... So I don't know. And Max, I think we share that because I know how much you take care of your people and the community. Like that is just as important. For me, that's just as important. Of course, you need the good business fundamentals. But I feel like if you take care of your people, then the people will take care. The rest will take care
Absolutely.
Of itself.
That's 100% true. So I'm going to ask a question that we didn't prep for at all.
Great.
I suspect I know that you're going to answer it because we've known each other a long time. So March is Women's History Month, which we're super excited that we're going to be talking to you and releasing it in March. I started a business that was female-led and female-owned in Richmond, Virginia in 2011. You also started a business. Neither one of us has ever been one to beat the woman drum. We just don't do that because I have always felt that I want to be respected for the tech, for what I know, not what gender I
want
to
talk about my work, not my gender. You want to know about, go talk to your partner.
Exactly.
But that's
not me. I'm curious your viewpoint on what that was like, because I certainly have an opinion on what that was like.
On what that was like being a woman starting.
Starting a technology business in Richmond, Virginia that was led by a woman. Did you find that had its challenges or?
Oh, that's an interesting frame for that. Because thinking about it as running a business, do I think in certain circles at certain times, people may, you know, may question like the technical, like, am I capable? But I try not to let those thoughts in my head. Like you know what I mean? Because in the corporate world, and I try to tell, like, when I'm coaching, mentoring women and all that, like, you know, whether or not you think you can or you can't, you're right. If you wake up in the morning thinking that the cards are stacked against you. They are.
Right.
And, you know, I, being really honest and candid, like over in the corporate world, if anything, I felt like if I'm keeping it real, I always felt like it was an advantage.
I agree.
Were there ever times where people said something off the cuff where they did?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's gentle ways to reflect that. More often than not, they don't realize that they're doing that and it's not intentional. Are there certain people who I feel like maybe didn't take me seriously or didn't quite hear what I had to say because they dismissed it? Yeah, that's happened. And I feel like I try to roll all those things into, well, what can I do? What's within my control? How do I get stronger? The frame on as a starting a technology consulting business, though, is interesting because I do think, you know, there may have been a wait and see, a perception like you go, let's see how this works.
Yeah,
and it took a little longer to get the work up front.
I think so, too. And I don't know that that was necessarily a female-owned thing. So,
so
my lens is a little bit different in that I was a female CIO in Richmond, Virginia. And so I was part of that peer CIO group that was in existence then. I don't know if it's still in existence or not. I was one of the only women in it, you know, me, Deb Cassidy. There were a handful of them for sure. But what was interesting for me was more that it wasn't that people didn't want to talk to me because I was a woman. That was not the case. Because they knew
if anything,
me, certainly.
Yeah.
You know, it was, and that could certainly get me in the door. What was more interesting was the startup where, okay, we respect you, Ro, and we respect what you're doing, but you're this teeny tiny little company and we don't know that we are ready to work with a teeny tiny little company. I think what was a little bit that I wasn't used to was when you're the CIO of a company, you can get an appointment with almost anybody because you're the CIO of a company. I didn't realize what had come with that. I thought it was me and not the title.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And what I didn't realize was the network that I didn't have that was predominantly male. I don't golf.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I don't go do all these things that are more part of that male technology network.
Yeah.
And you certainly, as a woman, it's not a great look to be going out and having drinks with men one-on-one and whatnot, which is really business development.
Yes.
But I think
it was hard to get a foot in the door.
Yeah. I don't think that was necessarily a sexism thing. It was just that the position that we were coming from was so completely different.
Yes.
You know?
No, I did feel a lot of that. It is very different. I think of it as we've sat in both chairs.
Right.
We've sat on one side of the desk, you know, trying to do the business development and on the other side of the desk, which is, you know, the one evaluating vendors. So, which brings an interesting perspective. But in those early, it's really a lot of grind and hustle and just take what you can get. And, you know, and then you just start working your way up as you refine things.
Yeah.
I wouldn't put, you're right. I wouldn't put that as though being gender related.
Yeah. It was more Richmond's tolerance for working with small companies that didn't exist a year ago. And as a CIO, I would have had that concern also.
Yes. It's a risk.
It's a valid concern.
You have a different level of risk when you're in that role. And by definition, you know, anyone who takes a leap like we did to go start something, you are, you have pushed a risk, a risk lever that most people will not pull.
It was fun.
We're still cooking.
So a couple things. So can you share a few success stories of apprentices who've gone through Max? We have a few.
Yeah. Oh my, well, you could share. Yes, you do have a few. Oh my gosh. One thing that I will say really grateful, for about Max, that diversity, you know, when I went to go start. So yes, we have lots of stories.
Right.
How would I choose? Like we have a bunch around Richmond. We have former short order cooks that are now senior software engineers, mobile developers. Oh goodness. I have lots of stories. The interesting thing about Max and diversity and my take on diversity, it is, for me, diversity is all the things, all right. the ages, all the perspectives, all the, right. you know, like backgrounds, as many different lenses and experiences as possible. I feel like you put those together. From day one, testing the idea of Max, it was really, I knew I was going to do supply demand problem. I knew if I was trying to compete with offshore, nearshore right. business models. And so the first question I had to answer is, okay, well, I know I have to hit this bill rate, having been on the other side of those contracts. You know, who would be willing to work for this hourly rate
right.
in exchange for on-the-job training? I put an ad on Craigslist just to test the idea, because now having burned a whole year doing the startup thing wrong, which was,
right.
I was ready now to actually follow a lean startup and do lots of small tests. So first test is there a pool? And what does that pool look like? And I put an ad on Craigslist, $10 an hour. This was 2011. I was like, $10 an hour IT apprenticeship, just to see who would apply. I did that like you, waking up at 4 a.m. I think I did that one late on a Friday night. And I had to take it down, by, just in Richmond Craigslist, took it down by Sunday because I had more than 100 applications come in.
Wow.
And I had people from all walks of life. And that's the phrase, one of those phrases I'm known for saying, from GEDs to PhDs. And I kid you not, there were PhDs applying for a $10 an hour job.
Wow.
To learn IT skills. And our pool, so then, I mean, that first test, okay, yes, there's a pool out there. Two, okay, now how do I choose?
Right.
And if anything, what Max, I won't say prides ourselves, but what we feel like our strength is how to pick them. And we're picking by the best interest. Like, is this a good choice for you? Are you likely to stay with this? Do I pick the person that needs the job most? Do I pick the person that wants the job most? Do I pick the most capable person?
Most aptitude.
The most aptitude.
Yeah.
And so we've spent, 11 years now refining that. And for me, it's, I want to see the whole world, everybody in their lane achieving their full potential, which means let's get you doing what you love, what you are right. good at, and what the world needs. So that intersection, that's the sweet spot, which means I'm not doing you a favor. If you need a job and I put you in this job, but it's not a good long-term fit, I've only delayed you from finding your lane. And so we feel like it's kinder sometimes to say no. We don't yeah. think one of two things will happen is people will either get mad at us and go try to prove us wrong, in which case they're better off.
Right.
Or they're going to go do something else, in which case we've helped them along their journey. So since that first test, our pool has remained that diverse. We have had we've had a PhD in neuroscience from UVA work with us for a year wow. and a half, now a senior data engineer at Capital One. We've wow. also had the first hire that I picked out of that pile happened to be someone with a GED like me, who thought to respond at 8 o'clock in the morning with a very detailed letter that shared his GED scores, was in the top 10%. I'm like, oh, here's a smart kid who fell off the tracks.
Right.
I may know something about that. And so that ended up being my first hire. He's now a senior mobile app developer at one of the local consulting agencies and is one that they brag about all the time. We've had a single mom, a story that may sound familiar, single mom with of two kids who is now working at a Silicon Valley company making double what I pay myself.
Wow.
And she's doing great and starting her own business. But we've had people from really all walks of life, all
That's
genders,
so great.
All socioeconomic backgrounds. We've had, you know, again, UVA grads, we've had high school dropouts and everywhere in between. We're just looking for upfront. So people refer a lot of people to us. And most of our pool has been that. It's somebody who knows somebody trying
right.
to break into IT. So we get a lot of high caliber referrals. And for us, it's we put everybody through the same process. Like, okay, well, we're going to give you a taste of what it's like. And we're looking for people whose eyes light up, who really love to thrive on the problem solving, on the banging their head up against the wall.
Right.
Like, we're like, because
right.
if you don't like that, you're not going to be happy 6 months from now. There is
yeah.
no book with answers in the back where, you know, you have to enjoy figuring it out.
That's the thing with IT.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where this isn't, this isn't going to be a good long-term fit.
If you're someone that has to go ask for an answer or isn't willing to dig in and figure it out, technology is not
for you. Right? And it's going to keep changing. And that's what we, I think that's what we love about it. Most people in IT love that. Like, you're never going to get bored. Whatever came out this morning is going to come, you know, there'll be the next level tomorrow, and you've got to keep relearning and relearning and relearning. So.
Right. Let's talk about technology for a minute, because you and I both love technology.
Yes.
AI. I have a passion for AI. I know you do.
Yes. AI, we are in a different phase. I think AI, if I went back to the emerging tech role before all the startup company, AI was in my decks. I used to call that the emerging tech deck. It was funny because I would go and more give people a framework for how to think about all this change. And then I would just flip in the three biggest buzzword slides of the year. So cloud computing, social media, artificial intelligence, big data, you know, whatever the buzzwords were. So AI has been on the radar for a long time. What we did see a year ago, I immediately knew this was a step up. Just applying those old frameworks. So I've been in run a business mode for 10 years, not emerging tech mode.
Same.
Yeah. And it's different now. Now we think about different things. Like in those first years of Max, you have to learn all these other things about running a business. Like, it's one thing to manage a cost center. It's another thing to all the things, all the employment law, all the, you know, running a company. Very different than running a organization department. But when ChatGPT came out at the end of November, that framework I give people is it very simple. It's a little four blocker, but it's just, you know, where is this at in the adoption curve? And is it going to jump the chasm? Chasm is at 13 to 15% adoption. And that's the difference between your early adopters and your mainstream, which you have early mainstream, late mainstream, and then laggards. And the chasm, 13 to 15%. So things like Google Glass, I knew that was not going to cross the chasm. I didn't go advise my friends like, oh, you should go spend $1,200 like I did to get this clunky thing for your face. It was more, I wanted to do the learning. The real innovation with Google Glass was the voice, which then worked its way into our phones. And for me, getting those insights is worth it. I'm in the early adopter category. Unless you can get past 15% adoption, once you get in the mainstream, now it's just a matter of time. How far is it going to go? And then is this, so that's one, is where is it at timing wise on the adoption curve? The other is how disruptive, is this just an innovation like a new, you know, iPhone 11, iPhone 12, iPhone 13, or is it really something disruptive? And for me in our industry, and that answer will be different for different business owners. For me in our industry, I immediately saw the disruption because you could see the potential. And, you know, it's just a matter of time. The adoption rate on this, I have been wrong on AI. In past lives, if I made predictions on timing, they were usually wrong on the optimist side. Like, oh, by this time next year. And I would usually be a little early. On this one, every prediction I made, oh, like by summer, GPT-4 is going to be out. I've been late. Like the timelines are just getting accelerated. And I was like, we have to be ahead of this. And what I see as impact for us, our industry, I mean, it's exciting times. There's so many applications. I don't see there's a shift in demand. Not a decrease.
I agree.
I think the skills that are needed are going to be different. And I think the jobs that we're going to be filling are going to be different. You know, there are certain roles that we currently fill today that will not be there. Help that can be automated and should be automated. Let's get people doing human things where they can add value, like talking to people, providing excellent service. And I mean, those are things that I do think as humans, we need to be thinking about what things are innately human.
You know, I'm fascinated by AI and cannot believe how quickly things are changing and the new features and functionality. I think that there are some ethical questions that we all need to ask ourselves on what we're going to be willing to let AI do for us and whatnot, what we're not. The unfortunate thing is that you and I can believe that, and that isn't going to stop people who don't have ethical boundaries from using AI to do things that AI should not be doing.
Yes.
But there's no stopping that train.
Right.
And that train's out.
Yes. And I mean, that's always been the case. I mean, that's always been the case, meaning whenever there's a new technology coming out, and that used to be in those emerging tech decks too, was just like, look at the printing press came out. There were people running around going, the sky is falling,
right.
The sky is falling. Oh my gosh, everybody's going to be able to read.
Right.
Well, the world will come to an end.
But the church did not like it at all.
That's that's right. But I mean, we all have the ability to be really, really good or really, really bad on any given day. And I feel like that gets down to an individual's health. It hurt people,
right.
healed people.
Right.
And you need to solve the underlying issues. The hurt people that, for whatever reason, want to hurt people, whatever tool comes out, they're it's not the tool. It's the fact that they're hurt, and we should look for the root causes of that,
right.
Why people want to do harm to others. But the fact that we know that there are plenty of those who would do harm, and there's a profit motive for most things in the cybersecurity realm. So yes, if the, I won't say bad guys, but if the folks up to no good, guys and gals, whatever, are using these tools, we need just as many ethical users of the tools. And so where I ended up landing was in education and teaching people and helping produce that talent. So we wanted, right away to figure out how to make it safe for us to take care of our customers, as well as start making room for our apprentices to develop the skills to use it properly and how to do prompting. And so for us, I think we have a benefit over traditional classroom. Like, we can pivot our curriculum, is a loose word for us, faster, just by giving people exposure and opening it up safely.
Right. Education's going to be the key. I mean, you want people to understand how to prompt correctly and how to use the tools in appropriate manners. And I think that for us, it's the same thing. We just want to make sure that both our customers, but our employee base, have an education behind these. Here's how these tools work.
Yes.
And here's how to use them appropriately.
Yep.
Cite your references to, all the things that you
first do. Things we did were multiple lunch and learns. We put out policy, what you can and can't do.
Right.
And then now we've evolved. We have our own, private portal where it gives us more control over it. Like, we can see what's happening on our version of GPT is the one that we've rolled out internally. Interesting, on the school side, we're trying to do what we can to help speed that up. So we have one of the more innovative things we've launched, and it is AI powered behind the scenes, is we have an internship simulator, a work simulator.
Oh, cool.
That we partner with schools and other nonprofits. And it's in line with our business, of finding talent, but, it allows, because there's more people who need internships than there are internships to go around. And so in order to create more equitable opportunities for people to try this out and get on the job experience, we've created, it's a whole online working environment. There's a company, you have a manager, you're either going to work on your security team, the dev team, or the data team. And so we're exposing students so that, again, they can make a more informed choice before they go too far down this path.
Yeah.
And that we've leveraged, we rolled AI into that right away. We're finding lots of ways with smaller businesses, just helping them focus on AI and automation. And again, the enterprises, they're looking for Power BI developers and Power Automate developers and, Automation Anywhere, robotic process automation, that whole set of tools. If we can get apprentices started doing things for small businesses that are working with things like Zapier, you're learning then Zapier, Airtable, you're learning the mental models that will then allow us to kind of upgrade you to the enterprise.
Yep.
Yeah. And then turn you loose and let the next one in. So
So I have one last question for you. And it's a question I get asked all the time.
Uh-huh.
You're over 10 years into this journey. What is the one thing that you've learned that you didn't expect in all of this?
10 years, that's a fantastic question. One thing I've learned that I didn't expect. I would say, so I have a lot deeper understanding of the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Okay.
And which brings with it, I mean, it's more the, if you, for those who don't know the Dunning-Kruger effect, it's the less you know about a subject, the more likely you are to overestimate your capabilities. Because we see this with the, we have to see this with apprentices. Our job is to almost to get them to the other side of what I call peak of mountain stupid. Like there's a curve to it. And then, you know, once you kind of, it's almost like the Gartner curve too. Then once you fail a little, you can get on that, that peak of productivity. So getting to see that in others, I learned to see it in myself. And now I'm seeing my life as a journey of kind of those peaks and valleys where it's like, so I've got a lot of mistakes that I've racked up in the last 10 years. And it's just more, how do I fold those in to where now I can be more things that I was 100% confident about upfront that, you know, now I'm challenging and what's changed and learning to be more curious. So
I love that.
And I try teaching people. Yeah. Like I said, I think in the beginning, it's like, I thought I knew it all. I built the company out. You know, I don't know. It's like, but you need that kind of tenacity and belief in yourself in order to do the kinds of things that we did.
You wouldn't be able to get up in the morning.
Right. Ever any days where you could either work. But now that we're in a different, you know, I feel like if anything, now I'm resetting.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, let's plan for the next 10 years. And what is that going to look like? And now it feels like more on the, we're out of the trough of disillusionment. And now like that productivity, which is how can we add the most value possible and continue to care about the people. Like I want to see us continue to grow, and I'm still every bit as passionate about that, how we find people, how we treat people, how we take care of people. So I don't want to muck up.
Right.
I want to make sure our values are like fully baked.
Right. Right. I mean, I don't see the burnout in you that I see in folks that have been through this journey for sure. I mean, you're still as excited as you've always been about Max Potential.
Well, that's good. That's good. And you as well. I don't know. Yeah. It's a, it's a process. It is like raising a kid.
It is.
And now I got to stay out of their way because I don't even know if I could get into Max Potential. My team, like their bar is very high.
Understand. Well, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. Yeah. Anytime. I'm excited to see all of our, you doing more of these for Women's History Month?
Yes.
Last year's series was awesome. Seeing, so, and kudos to you. Thank you for celebrating. Yeah.
You know,
peers.
Us ladies.
There are a lot of us out there.
There are.
There are a lot of us out there. Thank you.
You're welcome.